name is Lila Glasso-Francis, and I am the president of the board of the Carolyn Glasso Bailey Foundation. I'm bringing you another live podcast today with Sharon Loudon, an artist, educator, and advocate for artists, and our executive director, Frederick Jonka. Sharon Loudon is the editor of Living and Sustaining a Creative Life series of books and the artistic director of the Visual Arts at Chantiqua Institution. Sharon is an artist, educator, and advocate for artists. She graduated with a BFA from the Art Institute of Chicago and an MFA from Yale University. Her work has been exhibited in numerous venues, including the Aldrich Contemporary Art Museum, the Drawing Center, Carnegie Mellon University, Weissman Art Museum, National Gallery of Art, Birmingham Museum of Art, Wetherspoon Art Museum, and the Kemper Museum of Contemporary Art. Her work is held in major public and private collections, including the Whitney Museum of Art, the National Gallery of Art, the Neuerberger Museum of Art, Arkansas Art Center, Yale University Art Gallery, Wetherspoon Art Museum, and the Museum of Fine Arts Houston, among others. Her work has been written about in the New York Times, Art in America, The Washington Post, Sculpture Magazine, Art News, The Philadelphia Inquirer, and many other publications. She has participated in residencies at Tamarind Institute, Urban Glass, Society of Four Arts, and Art Omai, among others. Loudon's recent projects include windows at the Tweed Museum of Art and another iteration of windows at the University of Wyoming Art Museum. In February 2019, she is installing a new commissioned ceiling aluminum piece at the Philbrook Museum of Art in Tulsa, Oklahoma. I invite you to sit back and enjoy Sharon and Frederick's conversation today. Thank you for listening.
So my name is Frederick Jonka, executive director of the Carolyn Glasso Bailey Foundation, and I'm with Sharon Loudon, artist, and also someone who wears many hats. Mm-hmm. I think that there's a bio floating around. You guys can get all the dirty details. But I want to start by saying that the first encounter with Sharon was in your studio in Minneapolis. We took a group of our trustees from the foundation to visit Minneapolis. And we had a fantastic time in your studio. And I think so much of what we really learned was about how much you care for the creative process and how much you are very much an activist for artists, I guess might be the I don't know how you self-identify. Don't have any labels on you.
I think that's correct.
And currently you're in residence at the Sharp Walentes studio program, which is a fantastic opportunity for artists in New York. So those of you of artists amongst the crowd here, it's really a special opportunity for artists and a great feather in an artist's cap. So definitely congrats for that.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. I don't know if there's anything else you'd like to say to kind of introduce yourself to the
I just would say thank you
crowd.
For having me. It's great to be back here in OI. I haven't been here since, I think for many years, I was trying to remember, Carolyn actually flew me in to have a spa day with her, but this was many, many, many years ago. I mean, at least 15, 20 years ago. So
exactly, to preface that too, Sharon is someone who actually knew the namesake of our foundation, Carolyn Glasso Bailey, for many years, and also showed with her when she had her gallery in New York and had an ongoing relationship. And that's our door. And I will also add, as part of introduction, is that I've started an artist advisory council, sort of my personal artist advisors, and Sharon has very much generously agreed to be a part of that.
So
I'm
thrilled.
It's also, you know, a great opportunity to have you in town and to share more of what we're looking to do at the foundation. So I have peppered in a few questions that are also about, you know, how the foundation can really be the advocate for artists that I envision it being.
That's great. Thank you. I'm thrilled to be a part of it. And I feel like it's wonderful to then keep remembering, at least for me, Carolyn and her spirit and that connectivity. And it's wonderful to be here. And I mean, everyone here, I know people listening to this podcast can't see everybody, but I'll just describe it. It's a very warm environment with a lot of artists, which is really lovely. There's a certain cabal that I feel there's a comfort here.
Oh, that's great to hear.
There, did you feel it?
That's good. So this is we called this series our conversation on love and loss, and you know, very much inspired by many of the losses we've had and artists that we want to support have had. But when we were sort of preparing for this, we started talking about sort of a personal practice of yours that kind of connects to this, and maybe you want to talk a little bit more about that.
Which one?
The fierce generosity.
Oh, fierce generosity, yes. So I always believe that if you have an opportunity, you should share it. I really believe that as artists, as people. I think generosity yields generosity. I think giving is a gift, and it's actually what I think keeps our community running. I think when we're siloed as artists is when things stop happening, really, or they don't happen for a long time. They're short-lived. I see our community as a collective, and I also see it as very, for the most part, very welcoming. I mean, if someone says they're an artist and I'm an artist, it's like, come over here, give me a hug kind of thing. If I can touch them, give me a hug. But even metaphorically, there's this sort of sense of comfort and simpatico that happens. And so taking it beyond just that feeling and actually doing things for others and sharing that, I think makes opportunities happen for all of us.
Yeah, and I think that that's very much what we've seen in our community over the last few months, especially with this exhibition project. So many incredible artists coming together to help other artists. And I definitely think that, you know, we have yet to see the end to that. Like, I think there's definitely more and more sort of fruit that is ripening from that exchange.
That's great. I hope you don't see the end to it. That's the point.
Yeah.
It's there's something just really wonderful when you're experiencing something with somebody else. And I think a lot of artists, we've been raised to just be very singular. But actually the truth is that we've always been collaborative, whether it's working with a dealer, a museum person, a foundation, collector, in order for our work to be seen or for it to be moved forward, for it to have a space for conversation, we need to work with those people. So it's always been collaborative.
And so to that point, I think this might be a great segue to introduce your book series that you're editing. So
thanks.
Those of you who don't know, we have a couple examples.
Oh, these are my books.
This is our first two.
Yeah, these are my copies, actually.
We have a foundation copy you can flip through. But this was also something that we worked on when I was at MCA, Santa Barbara. We brought you out to Ben Frog Vartanian, who's right. The founder and editor of Hyperallergic, which is an amazing art blog if you don't know about that. And Prog and Sharon are good friends.
Yeah.
And it was a really sort of enlightening conversation for the artistic community in Santa Barbara. But I want to just point out that this series, so this is the Living and Sustaining the Creative Life. She, as functioning as editor, and I think once again as the sort of activist for artists. It's your button I'm giving you today.
Thank you. I had to make t-shirts of
exactly.
That or something.
But this is very, these are 40 artists sharing their stories. They're in essay form of how they sort of put together their life and how do they still maintain their creative outlets. You know, it's not as obvious to I guess, just sit in your studio, right? I mean, that there's many different ways to kind of put it together and make it fulfilling, right? Do you want to talk about how this got started?
Sure. Thank you so much. And thanks for having us in Santa Barbara. It was so much fun. And I was really grateful to be there with Rog and have that conversation. How did it get started? So in 2011, I want to say, I was moderating a panel at the College Art Association conference. And actually, that conference just ended today here in California, in Los Angeles, this past week. And I was moderating a panel that was called How to Make a Living With or Without a Dealer. And there were 400 people in the audience. And I'll never forget saying, as the moderator, say, wow, it's really great that you're here, and it really sucks that you're here. And the reason why I said that it really sucks that you're here is that I feel in our community there's this sort of old dependence on a dealer rather than a partnership. So that conversation was about that, like how can it be more of a partnership rather than a dependence? And you never know who's in the audience, so my publisher was in the audience. And I guess I did well that day, so she came up to me, a rep from my publisher, and said, we really want you to write a book. And I said, I can't even write an artist statement. I'm not going to write a book. And also, my loving husband, Vincent Villega, who did my website, and if anybody's interested, he is so good at it. He is here in the audience, and he said to me, oh my gosh, you're not going to write a book. And I think that was what gave me the spark to do it. So sometimes resisting or reacting against a no makes things move forward more, right? So my publisher said, what is it that you would want to do if you can't write about this or about anything? And I said, well, I would like to ask 40 artists to start a conversation about how they sustain a creative life. Because I hadn't seen that in books. When I graduated from graduate school, I graduated with $115,000 in debt, which is the equivalent of $206,000 today. I think it's around that. At least the last time I checked, it's about that. Well, we paid those debts off in 10 years. My parents... I'm estranged from my parents and came from, I guess, a sort of classic romantic idea of the rejected artist from their parents. And so we did that ourselves by creative financing, but also I applied for as many things as I could and things that sort of fit. But at the time, I didn't feel that there was a lot of support from my community. And so I felt that why can't we have transparency in the art world, which there isn't really that much of it, it's very opaque. Let's have some transparency and conversation about how artists sustain a creative life. I had no idea that that book would take off. It's in its seventh printing. It's been sold in 24 countries, and it continues to thrive and being adopted by many universities, etc. It's a little weird for me because my husband and I really edited that book, and so I'm afraid to open it because I'm sure there's a ton of typos in there, but there are typos in every book. So when we took a 62-stop book tour on the first book, and this book, The Living and Sustaining Creative Life, and that 62-stop book tour happened very organically, and my husband and I organized that. My publishers are very supportive, but the myth is that they do everything and they don't. Sort of like the galleries today, too. It's like more of a partnership. And so during that time, my publisher said, do you want to do a second book? And I said, yeah, I would like to do a second book and really show artists in the second book how not only do they have a leg in the art world, but they also create bridges into the public. And what do we do as artists, not only contributing to many economies, including the creative and general economies, but really, we contribute to the well-being of others, and that's what we do the most and what we've always done, and there's tremendous value of that. And so these 40 artists in my second book are amazing, very different than the first, but they're active in their communities in different ways, and generosity is the core of my criteria of who I select for all of my books. I have two more books coming out, and then there's 10 years of a series where I'm giving book contracts to first-time editors to create books on writing, dance, academia and the arts, art history, etc., to be able to select people of who are changing these fields and who we are today, so the public knows who we are as far as contemporary artists or academics or otherwise. And I'll just say, I know I'm going on, but I'll just say one more thing, that I'm currently on a 100-stop book tour. I've done 81 stops so far out of 100. Perfect timing. And 81 stops. We've met almost 6,000 people since March 2nd. And when you meet a lot of different artists from all over the country, and then we went to two other countries, and we're going to Alaska in April, and many other places, you get a real sense of what artists want and need.
Perfect segue. Thanks for lining that up. So part of why I also asked you to be a part of my advisory council, artist advisory council, is because I've seen that you are traveling around, that you're in schools, alternative art spaces, museums, I mean, galleries, every sort of space, that community space that artists may be present in. And I'm interested in knowing more about, if you can kind of encapsulate some of the general themes of what artists are looking for, or you know, things that you see are missing in as you're kind of really boots on the ground in communities across the nation. So I feel like you're one of the best people to ask this question of. So,
well, thank you.
Or, I mean, you know, not to put you on the spot or anything,
no,
but some thoughts that you have around that, because I'm also looking at, you know, what we can do at the foundation to really, you know, where are there also places that we can plug into the system to make some impact.
Well, thank you for asking. I feel grateful to be able to share this. I definitely know. I'll say this. Excuse me, this book tour it's really a conversation tour. And so the form of it is, like we did in Santa Barbara with you, is a lot of it is asking the audience what they need and want. And the books are really platforms for engagement and conversation. That's what they are. So I didn't want just the book to sit on the bookshelf. I really wanted these voices to come out. And I also use it as a platform for exchange and to get information. The other thing I should say to you is that I work for a lot of nonprofit organizations. The Ford Foundation has supported this conversation tour. I work for the Joan Mitchell Foundation. I also work for the Emily Hall Tremaine Foundation, and specifically an initiative called Artists Thrive, artistthrive.org, which is a platform, and that's free, that's on the web, that receives information from different artists, artist stories, as you said, artists on the ground, boots on ground, that can share with other artists. They have an assessment program, assessment on their website as a part of their program to be able to help artists with professional development and some guidance. And I really believe in that. So knowing that I have, those are multiple hats for sure. In addition, this is all part of being an artist. Knowing that I have to know answers. And the three things I would say that artists want the most are validation, permission, and opportunities. Permission, nobody needs permission. Mostly women ask permission, do not need it. So the other two are the ones that are the ones that people seek the most. Validation, as human beings, we need validation. It's normal. But for some reason, well, I actually know why artists want it a lot. It's because our work is our truth, and that's how we express ourselves in our most intimate way and how important that is. So that validation is like a response and continuation of the conversation that we're starting with our work. Opportunities to be able to flourish as artists, to continue our work, and to continue expressing ourselves in the world. And also integration to society, that leads in integration society. So on this tour, we talk about creating our own opportunities, self-sustaining, be able to, what does it mean to collaborate today, have partnerships with different people, be able to not be dependent on old systems, to have them as partners, i.e. Galleries, dealers, same thing. Galleries, not drug dealers, galleries, museums, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I think I've been saying this for 5 years and I still believe this. I think right now is the best time to be an artist. I think there's very little judgment as far as what artists like can or can't do, as different than it was when I first got out of school, when I got out of graduate school, rather, in 1991, where if you didn't have a gallery, you weren't successful. I'm putting that in quotes. Success is defined differently by each person. Or if you were, let's say, teaching, you weren't considered a serious artist, and now nobody cares, and which is great. Nobody should care anyway. You should do whatever the hell you want to do. That goes back to that permission part.
Well, I think you were going to say that, so it was validation, and then what was the second one?
Permission, which nobody needs, and then opportunities.
Opportunities. So do you want to talk about opportunities?
So opportunities, I think that artists can create their own opportunities with a lot of partnerships and partnerships with other artists. I talk about that all the time. There's many, many ways. It depends on the artist and what kind of work they do. It also depends on where, what kind of community resources they have. But we have our own resources too. I mean, I think a lot of it is too that sometimes we don't know what to offer. I hesitate to say that word because we have our work, right? But at the end of the day, though, an artist is a maker, but we're also the critic, and we're the person who drives the car with the artwork in the backseat and creates the journey for that work. So there's objectivity in that, right? There's objectivity in how an artist does what they do and where they place their work in the partnerships that they create. So I think it's all custom. But there are many ways, and I've seen this all over the country and in Australia and the UK, and I know I'm going to see it in Alaska when we go in April and different parts of other different parts of the country, that there's always a leader in every community, however small it is, that gets stuff done. And I think artists need to get out of the white box. I think for many years we've been beholden to one system. Not everybody can show in a gallery unless you make it yourself, essentially. But in New York City, where I live, I think, quite frankly, the market there is conservative right now. I think it's very beholden to money, and it always has been. But I do believe that there are less artists like showing installation work or showing work that, quote, is not
saleable
or in the marketplace. At least that's what I've been seeing, and please, people hearing this podcast, I'm sure they'll correct me if I'm wrong. But also, it's impossible for every gallery in New York City to meet every need of every artist all over the country. There are more and more artists who are graduating with MFAs that they can't be supported by that structure. So what can we do? Are we really going to wait for that? I think that's very sad to wait. We don't do that in our studios. We bounce back from failure like nobody else in any other field. We start things from nothing. We can do that easily. Those are two of many things that we can do as artists. I don't understand why we can't take those talents or that way of thinking into outside of our studio. I also think it's much more integrated. I think that if I'm on the phone and my dealer calls in my studio, I'm not going to go and get dressed up and change my way of thinking and stop my work and, you know, be a different person just to talk to that person. I'm just using a metaphor. They're going to call me. I'm going to put down my paintbrush and I'm going to talk to them. Then I'm going to go back to my work. It's just much more integrated than having many artists I know. It's not very separate. And they can wear those multiple hats very easily. So that's just generally about opportunities. I also think there's a lot of information out there, like this Artist Thrive website, but also a lot of nonprofit organizations and a lot of artist communities that create opportunities together. I mean, the two cities that I can think of right now that are powerful and engaging are Las Vegas and Baltimore. And those two cities rock my world because artists in those worlds, ah, I love them. And oh yeah, I'm very inspired by them. And my heart pulls for them. And I feel very full in those cities. And they just are undeniable. And that kind of power, when I see that in those two cities, but also in pockets in many other cities, it just says to me that we have it in us to do things that we're not restricted.
So I think you started talking about it a little bit, but how has this work then now impacted your personal practice, your the artist hat of all your hats?
So does that, somebody have my book? Can I have it back?
No, yours is right here.
Oh, okay, great. Can I refer to that? Yeah, sure. Thanks.
There should be another copy going.
I think there's another copy. Okay, great. I just want to look at the... because
the
I always,
best time to be an artist, right?
Best time to be an artist. Yeah, I said that. That was my husband, by the way. So the people in this book, I'm just referring to this. So I just want to answer your question by going back to the book. So first of all the things I do, all of my advocacy, which is not just the books and the nonprofits, but I also do a lecture series at the New York Academy of Art. I work for a lot of, I do a lot of things. I mean, it's on my website. Thanks to Vince. But the books came about for me to create opportunity for other people, but also create community. So half of the people in this book I didn't know before I did this book. So the impetus for me was, as an artist, I wanted to grow my community more. And so I thought, who do I want to take a journey with? And how can it impact my work? And so, like a lot of these people, I didn't have a connection to. And then through these conversations, I feel very enriched, but also learned a lot from them. And so how's it impact my work? I'm doing a lot of collaborations for the first time, physical collaborations for my life. The other thing that we're doing is we did get a grant to be able to take the data that we collect. So the data that we collect is usually videos that are filmed by my husband. It's really grassroots effort, this whole thing. Filming each program, responses from the audience in different ways, whether it's index cards that I hand out like we did at the MCA, or emails that I got a tremendous amount of correspondence, or even my own notes. And I'm actually going to do an exhibition of that data and then my response to that data in different forms. And that'll be performative too, which I think is important. But then in the Sharp Studio, I'm going to be, for the first time, I'm going to use the opportunity of their open studio. The open studio at the Sharp Studios is very, very big deal. A lot of people come through there. It's like a once a year thing that people go to, whether in the city. I'm going to share that opportunity and collaborate with somebody else who's never done this. And I've never collaborated. And I'm just love taking those risks. I'd rather do that than just show my work I'm very grateful that I have a gallery in New York, but show it for, let's say, to move work or to show work in a way that's very classical or for the market, let's say. I'm just being very crass in this way and talking about it. But no, I need to make my work, and I'm not beholden to anybody. So I feel like that's how it's given me a lot more freedom and energy and optimism and a lot more love. I run on love, for sure. That's the core of all of this.
Well, I think that is exactly what I wanted to get to. With the,
really? This is really great. This energy here.
That was what, you know, when we had started talking and when I was thinking about you for this series, is I think it's the love is really through your practice and how you greet and through these gestures of gratitude. And she's also an incredibly prolific thank you note writer.
Oh, thanks.
And she also swore it off, right? There was a moment where you weren't going to, you were like, I can't.
Easing back into it okay, now, sort of.
She's, and exhausting. So I feel like it was, there was some moment where it was, I think it was the studio visit in Minneapolis was maybe 2 years ago?
Something like that.
Maybe three. And, but your thank you note, I think you had sent to a different address.
Right.
And I don't know, it went back to you.
In New York.
In New York. And so it was like a year later, I got this thank you note from when we first met, along with like two other thank you notes from other things, you know, famous. And so, yeah, I mean, I think, I don't know, that's just been such a something signature, Sharon, that has been so meaningful personally. But I also can see how something like that gesture can, and I've seen it just on my own too, the importance of a thank you note, the importance of sending flowers, like you really do build, you know, networks with people. And it's a very human, it's a human gesture, I guess. And I feel like these days, you know, we could all use more of those and those moments to really be grateful, but to also sort of give unconditionally. And I think that's the generosity that I'm seeing in this book project and in building this network, this nationwide network. And so I guess that, which you, I know you're already thinking, you're already going there, but we've had this conversation too about continuing engagement, right? Like an artist will work with a partner with a gallery, a partner with an institution or a foundation or each other. But sometimes those are just one-offs. Like, so tell me, or let's share with the group more about your ideas about how those things can continue.
Oh, how, from gratitude?
Well, just this idea that like one engagement, you've spoken about how like, you know, you're really interested in sort of longer term engagements and
all the time.
And this is how you even posit this question to other people. So maybe talk a little bit about your thoughts behind.
That's so good. I almost forgot about that. Well, first of all, thank you for acknowledging the thank you notes. I did swear it off because actually there were two people who published them, like on not published, but they were on social media. And I freaked out because I thought they were always private. And so now I've measured them down a little bit. Like I'm not doing 20 a day as I used to do. So now I do maybe, I don't know, 4 or 5 or something like that. But I do think letter writing is very intimate. It's an art form itself. It's beautiful. It sort of makes me think about that person longer. It slows down time. I prefer that as a the best way to correspond. But it takes a lot of time. As far as continuing engagement, I always, when I recommend someone for doing a talk, or a exhibition even, or anything, I only recommend people who are generous, who will not only engage in the activity of which that I'm recommending, but also beginning, middle, and way beyond. I just think that exhibition, for example, is just, it's not a thing to get. It's a marker in our lives as artists. But it's the people you connect with that is, to me, the magic that happens through the work itself, and that those engagements hopefully will continue and thrive beyond that time. I mean, this is actually not unusual, because in our community, in the art world, if you will, in our art history, curators rotate often. They go to different places, and they often bring artists that they have worked with over many years. I mean, back to Carolyn, that's what she did. She introduced many artists to different people, and she continued to work with them in different exhibitions and partnerships. And that's very classic. And I think that's about the bigger picture and the human part and the love part is strengthening these friendships, which for me is the most important part of my life. And my work is first and foremost, but my work is my vocabulary. It's my truth. But then the people who are in my life, like Horag Vartanian and many other artists who, Sharon Butler, Austin Thomas, people who are in my books, Kate Shepard, These are people I breathe with every day, who I don't know who I would do without in my life. And of course, my husband, that's a given. He's my family. But we actually collaborate all the time. We have exchanges and fluidity, and through also power, there's a certain power that happens with people who love to be generous, because we make things happen. And then that generosity yields this sort of contagious generosity, but then actually physically creates outcome. And that's what I'm interested in the most right now. So I'm not necessarily interested in just, I mean, inspiration is great, but there's inspiration doesn't have any legs. It has a lot of intangible feeling, right? But inspiration hopefully can yield something physical that can actually show that love or that strength that's in love to go forward.
I in our last conversation, I had some trouble with addressing the loss part of our theme. And I know that we've shared today just, you know, how significant it was to lose our mutual friend, Carolyn, but maybe not speaking of people in particular, but maybe more if there are any sort of experiences of loss in your life that ended up being very fruitful beginnings.
Wow. I do think, just like an artwork, a subtraction can be addition. Mm-hmm. I think that there have been people in my life who I don't speak with that and are no longer in my life, that have created spaces for other things and other people. And because of what I learned from them, they've created spaces for me to carry those friendships, for better or for worse, into other relationships and other experiences. With Carolyn, she taught me a lot, and she was a great spirit. She had this great, she was so lovely and nice on the outside, and then she had this drive and this undeniable strength to her. You could not say no to her. She was extremely driven. We had that in common. There was a great rigor and energy to her. That's still in me. And when I think about her, it drives me forward. And being here today makes me think about that. And looking at a piece of my work here, which is an agent's piece from 1996, it reminds me of that. And I haven't seen that work in a long time. So it's, I think, the past coming forward to the present, there are reasons that happens, and paying attention to them is important. But how about you? I ask you that question back.
Well, I think in many ways, a personal practice of mine is also, building networks of people that it's a pleasure to work with. And I have to say, you know, having started the foundation just a few months ago, it's been, you know, some of the first few people that I've been able to bring in or collaborate with are people that I've had such an incredible time working with previously. So I think that's definitely part of a personal practice. And I think that, you know, just listening to you say that sometimes losing those people also makes space for new people or new experiences. And that's not necessarily a perspective I've had on loss before. So I definitely think loss can lead to new beginnings, but it's an interesting perspective, I think, to look at it with people.
Well, life is about the people you meet. Mm-hmm. I really believe that. Mm-hmm. And I think when you have shared experiences, it strengthens everything that you do. It certainly has gotten into my work, I mean, as an artist, and probably certainly your work here. And I don't want to be around people who aren't so much fun to be with, who I can't be with anybody who's a drag. And everybody in my life right now is super generous. I can't be with anybody who also it has a lot of fear, or at least can't show that vulnerability, because vulnerability yields strength, right? And so I'm interested in transparency, and it takes a lot of courage to be transparent and to be effective with that strength and that transparency. So when I think when you come together, and I'm so grateful to work with you and with the foundation, and it's an honor and wonderful privilege that when you work with people, you have that shared, you have shared experiences or want to have shared experiences. It's really can be very, very fun. It's like a high. And that's, I love living that. I feel really grateful. I never get a lot of sleep. This is my big problem right now, because I'm loving every part of, I feel really grateful, loving every part of my life, except for the self-care part. I've got to work on that.
It's definitely important.
Definitely important. I being here in Ojai, it reminds me of that, because it's very lovely here. It's relaxed, and I'm very slow here. It's quiet. It's, you can just walk down the street and have a drink and just chill. I mean, that's really nice. It's very nice.
I was sharing with you earlier that the foundation has purchased copies of your book to give to recipients of the art scholarship from in Santa Barbara, the scholarship foundation. I'm part of an award ceremony. And so we're going, I was like, this would be the perfect, for somebody who's graduating high school and going into art school, presumably, that it would be really inspirational to have this. And I think I had a fine time transitioning, but at the same time, it would have been really interesting to have known about this and to really looked at the plurality of ways it is to become, you know, a professional in whatever form. I mean, I started out as an artist, but ended up through a, you know, whatever. I can't say that right now. A circuitous. But,
it led, you know, to you led being to, ED.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I think that part of why I'm invited to speak at this presentation is because of that. But I guess what I'm getting to is that, you know, if you were to tell somebody coming out of art school, like if there was one thing that, you know, you just one little thing that you oh wanted, to, and it could only be one thing, what would you what would you share?
Well, first of all, I want to say that these books show ways in which artists sustain their lives. So, and there's stories that people can take from them, depending on who you are and what you identify with, right? So there's no one way to be an artist. I would say the one, wow, it's hard to say that. I mean, there's many keys to sustaining a creative life. I think the one thing that sustains people the most is that, I'll just say, I say this all the time, there's no such thing as a rejection. It's a difference of opinion. I think that most grants and opportunities that people don't get is not, they are not personal. It's not personal. So most artists I know are very resilient. They, sure, it stings when you apply for something 8 times over the course of many years. I applied for a New York Foundation for the Arts grant for 15 times over 23 years, and I got it on the 15th time. Anyway, if I was drowning in my tears for 14 years or even less than that and stopping to do that, I wouldn't have achieved that. And through that, receiving that, I now have a relationship with the New York Foundation for the Arts. They are my fiscal sponsor. I love that organization and what they give to artists. And I feel like it was a moment. It was wonderful to receive that award and that money for sure. But it was more so as now I have a relationship with this organization. And I'm also on their advisory board, which is great. So then I can give to them beyond. But the point is, I think that's the one thing. I also want to say one more thing that I've forgotten to mention. The other thing about the things I do, and I would just say that's maybe A and then B. Once an artist, you're always an artist. So it's, I don't see that there are any divisions. I don't want there to be any divisions in the art world. Like, people wear multiple hats, as you mentioned. But these books were also ways for me to change things or try to change things or make a statement. So in publishing, usually the editor of a book, of an anthology, gets all of the money, royalties. And the royalties are very small because these are academic books. But I thought symbolically what I can do is just be a contributor like everybody else. And we split the royalties evenly. Everybody also got their own copyright, which is unusual too for an anthology. So those little things that I could do maybe contribute to something else or conversation leading to something else. But haven't we always done that as artists? We create new things through how we express ourselves, whether it's a mark on a page or maybe changing an entire environment. So what we have within us is the ability through whatever we do to be able to make impact. And I guess what I would say is from the A, rejection, B is understanding, always knowing the many assets we carry with us without even saying a word. We show up in the room and we have so much more to offer than many other people. But we have to understand what those things are for ourselves.
Well, thank you, Sharon. I thought this would be a great opportunity if anybody has any questions or comments. Or Corinne in the back, shot her hand.
And you.
And then Cassandra.
What the traits are of the artists in Baltimore and Vegas and also how it can be replicated, what people could learn from artists in Baltimore and Vegas and bring to their own communities.
In both of those communities, there's not a lot of a commercial infrastructure. So they have that in mind, in common. So like they don't have a lot of galleries in their cities, although Baltimore has Washington, D.C. nearby and Philadelphia. Las Vegas has Los Angeles and other and Reno and other areas that are nearby, relatively. But they don't have a lot of commercial infrastructure like galleries, et cetera, in their cities. So they have to do things. That's the big thing, is they have to make things work with each other. So when you're forced to make things work with each other, we don't have those sources of validation, you find ways of doing it. The common traits in those two cities are that artists are very generous with one another. There shouldn't be competition, really. If I just mentioned this on Facebook the other day and Twitter. Someone called me the other day. I talk to artists every day. I feel like it's an honor to talk to artists. I really do. I feel very humbled to be in this community. This artist was in Chicago, and she was referred to me by another artist who needed some help. And she just said, you know, I'm applying for all these things. I'm never getting anywhere. And I said, well, what else are you doing? And she said, well, I thought the only way to be able to go forward is to apply for things. Well, isn't just waiting for things or just applying for things, being beholden to a system rather than doing things yourself, right? It's just part of the ecosystem. So to me, it's like, what do we do ourselves that is close to our own work and our own lives as artists that can move things forward? There's a long list of things we can do. You know, some things right off the top of my head are things that have been done for years, like open studios, right? But not just inviting your community, invite people from all over the world. You never know who will come here. It's also a way to start a conversation. Simply put somebody on your mailing list. Do the research. Find out who's out there in the world that you can maybe have a collaboration with or dialogue based on what you like and what you feel like your work could be in simpatico with. Not because you want to make money. That's a given because we have to survive. I always think it comes back to the work as far as the criteria. And then also what you see the context of the work is for you. So could you get a bunch of friends to apply for an art fair together? That's been very successful with artists that I know. I used to have a group of people where we'd have a potluck dinner, invite different people like critics, curators, et cetera, once a month when we would need to ask them questions that we didn't know or how to connect with them, and they would come. So, I mean, think out of the box. It's very, very simple, really, I think. It's just a matter of taking those little steps. But the people, back to your question, people in Baltimore and Las Vegas have found ways of doing that. A lot of community engagement. Baltimore has a lot of artist-run spaces. Las Vegas has also podcast programs and different alternative ideas. There's the Neon Art Museum that was started by artists there. I mean, there's all different things that are happening in different cities that are replicable because they're not waiting for things, essentially.
That's great. Thank you.
Cassandra.
I have a million questions, but
Great. Right.
The one on the top is, you are doing a lot. Like, you're obviously a person who is never going to be bored, ever. And you're on boards, and you're writing thank you letters, and you're writing books, and you're doing book tours. And like, how do you find time to make your art?
Okay, so I get that question every time I go somewhere, which is, it makes me feel good, because now I think I've got it down.
Your response.
Yeah. First of all, my work is in all different forms. So I make work in my studio, but I'm not beholden to the studio. I make animation outside the studio. I do very big sculpture projects on site. And when I do projects on site, I like to work with other artists, and I also like to negotiate budgets so that I can pay artists higher than living wage for them, so I can make it impactful and try to make a statement with that too. Like, try to use every opportunity for some form of generosity, and then also work with artists to learn from them and create sort of mini residencies with them. But that happens on site. But I do all of my writing at home, and I consider everything that I do under the umbrella of making work. So it all feeds into each other.
And you don't have kids.
Don't have children. Many other people did that for me, so thank you very much. I appreciate that. We made a decision. I never really wanted to have children. So we made that decision, but also in the back of my mind, because my parents didn't support my education, I never knew I could support that financially, or never thought I could. So that was really a determining factor for me. But boredom, you bring that up. Actually, boredom has been in my life a lot. And when I'm bored, it initiates all of these risks for me to take. So actually, it's been a good friend to me. So when I'm bored, it kicks my ass. But with this residency at the Sharp Studios, which I'm very grateful, it's been very good for me, because when I'm not traveling, I'm in that studio. I'm conscious of that time that I have to be there and that privilege that I have. And using that privilege and also bringing other people into the studio to draw with from time to time, but also just engage with on different levels. So when I come back, go back to New York tomorrow, I'm in that studio. After I get home, I'm in there tomorrow night just to touch that aluminum. I'm for the first time in my life, I'm taking that time to make a 1 year installation. I've never done that in my life. It's sort of like making a painting for a year. I've never done that either. But how do you make an installation of a whole room for a year? And then I'm also collaborating with somebody to have a response to that and contribute to that. So I'm taking these risks because I know I can from the other forms of the things I do, but always, every day, every moment, in different places. Thank you for that question.
A couple times while you were talking, you said how happy you are to be part of this community. I was just curious, are you referring to this network that you're talking about?
This particular here?
You mentioned my community. I'm so happy to be part of this community. And it was just, I'm thinking you mean this like network you're creating. And if you are, I'm imagining you are, it's really nice, because it's like, I'm like, where is this place? Did she mean Ojai? But I feel it as like a physical place, like, you know, my community. It's like this, yeah.
Anywhere our artists are, that's how I feel. Mm-hmm. That's our community. And also people in the community, like, I mean, it's really hard to be a gallery dealer. I mean, it's really tough for most of them. They have to keep that afloat every day, and most of them believe in artists. Most of them are good people, just like any other field. A lot of my friends are in museums. I love them. I love all different hats that people wear. I don't see any divisions within any of them. I flow through all of them, and I collaborate with all of them. So I see that of the wholeness of that.
That's nice. I feel it.
Oh, cool. I feel it here, right now. You had a question.
Okay, just so speaking of community, you asked one of the things that came out of the book. Very important for the kids to know that you can't do it without a community.
Right.
And to be part of the community, get out of the silo of your studio, because visual artists are loners, and not to be loners, because you all help each other.
Well, with that said, though, I think that some people are shy and not as outgoing as I am. Sure. And I certainly love my privacy, though. I love my privacy. I don't like sharing some time with people. Of course, everybody likes their privacy at some point, I would imagine. But I think Vince makes a good point that there are different ways of getting out of your studio, whether even if it's you're in your pajamas and you never leave your studio and you just like things on Facebook or you're behind the computer, right? I don't know how all of you do this, but there are different ways of outreach.
Yeah.
Oh, you had a question.
What do you think are the differences between academic artists and self-taught artists in terms of opportunities?
Well, that's a great question. That would be a question for somebody else who provides those opportunities. But I would just say from observation of people I know who are both in both of those groups, either academic or saying self-taught, I think it just depends on the community that you find for yourself. That can be many different people. But I'm not going to make any judgments because I think they're all different art worlds. There are all different art worlds.
Well, and I think I would add to that that from my perspective, you know, there really isn't a difference. I mean, I think you're still an artist and you're still practicing. Like that's
right.
your practice, whether, you know, you learned it in school from a bunch of people or you didn't. I mean, I think it's all about your experience, I think.
Yeah, again, it seems that a lot of opportunities like grants, awards are given mostly to people that have a MFA or some sort of degree, you know, which is, I understand, I mean, it makes sense.
Well, I think that's...
So what's the other route that...
I think that's changing. I think it's more about how I've served on a few of the grant panels and residency panels, and it really comes down to the work and also recognizing that person's work in the field. So I do agree that MFA may help in some way. I mean, MFA is an additional education too, forgetting about the professionalism part of it. Hopefully you're getting good education from an additional degree that furthers your work in some ways. That's the ideal position of that, at least for me, the ideal part of it. But just because someone is self-taught doesn't mean that they have any less of an education than somebody who's got an MFA. It's just different. So I actually think that's changing, and I think it just depends on the grants you apply for and how they fit your work too. Some grants are not applicable to other people, huh?
I'm just curious. Have you run into, in your experience, into something specific for self-taught art?
I don't have that knowledge, but there's an art fair that comes around every year, which is the. I've forgotten the name of that art fair. It's for self-taught artists, outsider art fair. Let's put it that way. And certainly I would contact people or dealers and the person who runs that. They may know that information because that's the world that they are in. So I couldn't answer that for you.
I mean, I might even just suggest, like, you know, even if there are opportunities that say you have to have an MFA, I would even maybe suggest applying anyways or reaching out to them and saying, you think, you know, this is your, if you have a, you know, somewhat extensive portfolio or experience that you're able to justify, I would even challenge that. No, don't make a fake. No. But I think, you know, if it's something that you think is a good fit for you, maybe consider challenging that.
I agree.
Charge 15 cents.
And she had a degree.
That's insane. Yeah.
Sorry. Oh, yeah. Seaburn, do you have a question?
Yeah. I just had an addition to what you were saying about Baltimore and Las Vegas. Is when we were in Havana in 2000, Havana was the same way that the artists, because they didn't have a lot of resources, they really got together and coordinated their efforts. There was a lot of sense of generosity, and it was so different, and it wasn't so competitive, and that, you know, it's because when there wasn't a lot, that they just didn't have a lot. That was just one thing I wanted to add. But you said vulnerability yields, and I can't remember what it was. You were talking about love, and do you remember what you were saying there?
Want to be a yield strength.
Strength. That's what
it is.
Yeah.
Thanks. Somebody. That's a quote from somewhere. I don't know where it is from.
Yeah, that kind of just leads to the question that I was thinking last time, which was dealing with 14 years of not getting into the grant and thinking about, yeah, like experiences with.
What?
Of loss and how you regain your strength. And I was wondering if that was something you felt like you were born with, that kind of rock within you, or is that something you've cultivated? And if so, is there any exercises that can start doing to build up that?
I think that's a great question. I come from a family of a high work ethic. I've been pretty driven. I think part of it is DNA. But I totally was upset for many years when I wouldn't get things, like feel like I'm not accepted, or it gets down to that validation, right? But after a while, like I wasn't caring as much. I think that's a big part of it. And there's a difference between arrogance and confidence, right? It took me a long time to get confidence. I mean, I'm 53, so age has its benefits, right? Gets a little exhausting caring so much about things that are small, and that there are bigger things in the world that are bigger than a grant, right? So my priorities sort of shifted, and some things happened to me in my late 30s, early 40s, personally, that made a big impact. But also going through 9/11, I lived a block and a half from the World Trade Center. My husband is a jazz musician. His studio was flooded in Hurricane Sandy. And then we had a house fire Christmas night 2013 in Brooklyn. And those things were significant markers that puts things in perspective. I've also learned that because I don't have a strong family support, and I never really have, that you find where you can find where love is in other places. So when you have things in your life that are a lot more meaningful than a $5,000 grant that you're receiving validation from other people, I mean, sure, I would love to receive that validation and finances from other people or other organizations. I mean, I can think of the ones in my head that I would love. But if I don't get them, I'm trusting the universe has other plans for me. And that's what I think. And also at the end of the day, if I can just, the biggest thing that I would say is the mark of, people ask me a lot, what is success, right? What do you think is success as far as an artist? And I surveyed people in my first book and asked them all what success is to them. And they said just, all of them said this, just having the ability and time to make the work. And that is exactly what is important to me. So I feel very privileged to have that, so that if I don't get something, that's okay. I have to find other ways to continue making the work. So I think it's just a way of thinking, the training your brain to think that way and not having so much dependent on a system that provides that validation you find in other places. And you know, when I stopped caring, it's when things started happening in my life. And now I'm just kicking my ass that I had so many years where I was caring way too much.
Well, maybe one last question if anybody else is. Okay.
So how important is it to have a partner, whether it's the partner that you have here tonight, and that structure? And that could be anybody, because you said that your family wasn't the core of this. Just on the day-to-day stuff, not in the reaching out of the friends and the friends around, your other artist friends, but having that structure every day, do you follow a certain type of a path every day, or is every day very different for you? Or are there key things you do every day?
I don't think my partner, my husband, creates that structure for me, because I have to create that structure for myself. I mean, certainly my life would be very, very different without my love of my life. My love of my life is Vincent Bellega. He's my heir. He's my family. But I don't, there's no way, as also as an independent, strong woman, I would ever say that there's nobody that sets that structure for myself other than myself. I certainly allow for him to contribute to that when I want it to happen. But the way that I set up a structure in my life, I have systems in place. Like, I have an amazing database. I think database and a good mailing list is your currency. My database is my best friend. So I fuel, put everything in that. And then the more, I actually don't know really what time I'm leaving for my flight tomorrow. I don't even think about it till I wake up in the morning. I know I have to fly tomorrow. I have that idea. But what that vehicle serves me well, because then I can live freer. So setting that in place. But also, I wake up in the morning, first thing I do is I look at my emails, and that also sets up a certain structure that I give time for that. But I also have good time management, where I think of everything I do as it's all 100% a job, 24/7. So I block time in my studio, in my calendar, even all the things like going to the doctors or making a certain phone call, or more self-care. I have to do more self-care. Let's put that in there. So, and then I'm strict to it, because then it's honoring myself. But that's how I do it. How do you do it?
I think that's one of the greatest answers, by the way, I've ever heard. Because we tend to get into ruts and systems and mess up our systems and don't leave room for these things that just come at us during the day, too, where we can stop and respond to a little email or have a moment that's really fun and spontaneous.
By the way, I can interject really quickly. I'm the one who makes sure she gets to the point on time.
I need more of that option and opportunity available every day, even though I do find that I'm pretty structured with trying to get into exactly what you're talking about, my database, my points of contact, all of that. But it's so important that you have that, that it comes from you first.
Right, it comes from you. Right.
Self-structure, that self-love, that self, I'm going to leave time for all of this.
Right.
But I just have to thank you for coming here, because I thought that was one of the greatest answers. I just met this woman the other night right here and invited her to come. And I think that this is one of the things that is so opportunistic, is to just reach out to new people. And even though she's not in the visual arts, I can see her shaking her head throughout this whole entire evening and just really absorbing it in a very useful way. And I hope that all of you got something from this tonight.
Well, thank you for your generosity in hosting and sharing the hosting of this. But I'll just add to this that Vince does help me a lot. He project manages all of our work together, so he does arrange for all the logistics in my life, as you were saying too, Heather, right? Heather.
Yeah.
And so he helps me every day, and thank God.
Flight's at 12:30 tomorrow. LAX.
So he does that. He's amazing. But you know, we choose our partners, and we choose who we have in our life for a reason. But I also want to just say to everybody, leave with this, if you don't mind, and say that I'm always interested in what artists need and want. I feel really grateful and honored to be in our community, and I encourage you to reach out to me, and I'd love to be able to be a catalyst for everybody if I can. It takes me about, oh my God, like at least 3 weeks to get back to people by email, but if you tell me who you are, I'd love to be able to exchange and further this conversation and hear what you need and want. I wish we had more time to, do we have that time or not, to be able to ask that question?
We'll throw it out there. Yeah, I think we should be wrapping up, but throw
so
it out there.
So as a last thing, I would love to hear what, because here I've talked a lot, I would love to hear what you have to say about that in your community.
Well,
why are you here?
Can you leave a contact for us?
It's on my website.
To respond more in length?
Sure, it's on my website.
Oh, great, thank you.
Yeah. And why are you here?
Sharon, the question is, what do you need or want? That's what you're asking.
Yeah, and why are you here?
I can tell you what I need and want.
Go.
Well, so I moved to Ojai. My husband's also a musician. He's in a rather famous rock band. And we have children.
A famous rock band?
He's in a rather famous rock band.
Oh, what is it?
Wilco.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Cool.
And he's gone a lot.
Oh.
And we have two kids. And the reason we moved to Ojai is because my parents live here. And we lived in New York. And we had our first child in New York. And as soon as we had that child, he went away for a whole year.
Yeah.
And so at one point I was like, I can't be an artist. unless I move back home. Like, I have to go live where my parents live. Otherwise, I just have to forfeit. Like, this is in New York, you can't afford it. I mean, like, if you're a rich person to have kids in New York. So we moved to Ohio. I mean, like, poor us, we have to live here. But so I'm not really complaining too much about that. And I am able to make work living here. A lot of work, actually, living here. But what I want is I want art here. Like, I want to know the community. I want to bring the community. I want art in Ohio. I don't want to have to drive to LA anymore. I don't want to have to fly to New York. I want art right here. Mm-hmm. That's what I want.
Okay, I think Freddie's going to answer that.
We have an ongoing conversation.
I think that's part of the foundation, but I also think it's a part of artists bringing notice here. Like, you all have to create things enough to do the outreach to get people here. It's not just a matter of the foundations and galleries and other organizations doing it. You can do it. There are a whole bunch of artists in New York that created Bushwick Open Studios that now has become this huge entity that people from all over the world go to. It started very small. This happens over and over and over again in every community. You can really do that here. Go! I think you're going to do it.
Oh, I know. I will.
Yes, you will. Yes, sir.
I wasn't going to say anything beforehand, but I'm glad the conversation opened up to this. As you said there, I've lived in this community for, short story, close to 20 years now. I have a connection to this area. I grew up on the East Coast, very familiar with Baltimore. I grew up in Philadelphia. Got into the art modeling world. C. Byrne knows me very well. We had a long tour in the past. But basically now, what I do, I haul museum quality artwork across the country. You know,
which company?
I work for a company called US Art.
Oh.
So, yeah. And, tomorrow night, I'm heading to San Francisco, then to the Portrait Gallery in D.C. Then I'm heading to East Lansing. It's probably similar to your schedule a little bit. Time-wise, you know, except I'll be driving. But my point being, what I was getting to, is that not having truthfully grown up in Philadelphia, my cultural influences were the Eagles and the Phillies, you know. But what I did see, what I was getting to with it is ultimately something in that gave me a sense early on in my life of this geographics in America that. Seemingly, what I've recognized in the art world is that you have this contingence of San Francisco is its own scene, LA is its own scene, New York is its own scene, Chicago is its, et cetera. You know, and even artists in my years of art modeling in LA were unaware of artists in Ohio and vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
So what I was getting to is basically, would there be a modern day approach, contemporary strategy, if you will, to nationalize art in America a little bit more. So at least there's a kind of a, you know, it feels like such a large pool of talent and people doing that you get lost unless you're in your own little small community. And you're just going, like, I was blown away when my first trip to the St. Louis Museum of Art. You know, I was blown away. And other cities like Kansas City as well, you know, Atlanta.
Actually, I think what you're also speaking to is, which I think is very much happening right now, is a focus on decentralizing the art world.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of what some of the work you've been doing and going to regional cities, there's also an incredible organization called Artadia that does unrestricted cash grants for artists. And they're in a few major cities. But the director, executive director, Carolyn Ramo.
She's amazing.
Yeah, I think it was maybe an Artsy, or there was another platform. She
Artsy.
It was, yeah. And a really great article about sort of the importance of the non-centers.
Yes.
Interesting, because Artadia doesn't give grants to people in small towns. They only give grants to people in big cities.
No, but they give them to, like, Atlanta and other cities aren't small cities, but they... They're smaller than New York.
Right. It's not just
not
New
just
York,
New York,
LA.
They have other cities.
So I don't qualify for any of those grants.
I agree. I think that's a great article to look at. But also, sir, what's your name?
My name is Clay.
Hey, Clay. The oh God from my husband before. I'm from South Philadelphia, so I know the Eagles and the Phillies and the Flyers, and I. So that's why he was commenting on that.
Okay.
But I just to. put that in context. But I also just want to say, too, that Hyperallergic is a great publication. Are you familiar with that?
I'm not.
Okay, so if you look at Hyperallergic, they have 10 to 12 articles a day from all over the country and the world. And they tap into the small regional areas as well as the larger cities. And just being attuned to what other people are doing through that blog,
right,
is one source that can connect you to the rest of the world. So what artists are doing. They're a major source for information. And then there's a lot of other blogs out there that give concentrate, and in different cities, like Be More Art in Baltimore talks about Baltimore. But you're right, there are silos, and people function differently in different areas. Like Ojai is really different than Philadelphia, you know, that, and structurally and otherwise. So people are going to think differently, and they're going to operate differently. They're going to think about art differently. But we all are together in one community as artists.
Agreed.
And so I do think there are publications, there are organizations that connect us. So I think it's out there. You just have to find what's right for you to latch onto, to absorb that information.
And I think now more so than ever.
Yeah.
If I just add, so Parag, who's the publisher of Hyperallergic.com, has been on many, multiple book events. And this concept, this question has come up multiple times. Is it important to live in the big metropolitan cities, LA, New York, Chicago? And his answer is, absolutely not. So this guy looks at artwork 24/7. Like he will look at anything, anywhere, anytime, of anyone. He's like, the last thing he asks is, where does this artist live? Like, it doesn't,
he doesn't care,
matter anymore.
It used to.
It, right,
it used to,
but that's
does
over.
Not matter anymore.
With the internet, it's totally
exactly. So speaking to your point, like, yes, there's these silos, which are individual regional ramifications, but in general, no one cares where anyone lives anymore.
And I would like to add to that. As a filmmaker, the last feature that I made, I was resourcing all over the country, mostly people that I actually never even met in person.
Oh, wow.
This is a feature film with known actors.
Oh,
world.
Cool.
And it was incredible. I actually, in the end, this, and you know, you're talking about art being filmmaking is incredibly collaborative.
Of course.
And all these people I never met, and I haven't ever had this experience before.
That's amazing.
Right.
Because it was all Dropbox, and then this kind of like hyper Dropbox,
right. Right.
And this, that, and the other thing. I was even working with the editor, which you never do over the internet.
Yeah.
Usually, you're there watching frame by frame by frame. Turned out okay. I mean, I get what you're saying. It's, so I'm glad to hear you restate it, because
mm-hmm.
it's putting it into a different paradigm, if you will, or a box for me. It's the same for all of us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so thank you.
Well, thank you for sharing. Bruce, right?
Bruce, right. Yeah.
Thank you for sharing.
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing.
I appreciate it.
I think that, one last thought.
It might be kind of abstract, but when you said, what do you want and need in regards to art, it's kind of abstract, but I feel it's like emotional, intimate connection. And it's kind of funny because I also feel like, you know, you're making art and then you put it out there, and there's kind of a feeling that, like, oh, you have to be very, you know, like, not transparent in a way, like, just let it speak for itself. And I just, but I found that I'm not terribly, like, I don't focus a lot on, like, the selling and the presenting. It's like that kind of detaches for me. I just like to, like, have it there and see how people react. And I do feel this compulsion to, like, spread further and communicate to other people, because, you know, even the people around me, like, I mean, some of the best experience, even though I don't really like going and selling artwork, I'm always like, oh, God, I have to do it, I have to put a price on it, I have to go talk to this person. Each one has been so precious and amazing, and, like, I usually, like, they're buying my artwork, and then they've got this, like, really special gift for me, and it's, like, this incredible engagement and interaction, and I love that feeling. You know, like, I've had a couple shows where, like, nobody knows that I'm the artist. I get to listen to what people are saying, and that's so wonderful. You know, it's so, like, you know, I don't want to hear my story about it. Like, what, you know, it's like this beautiful engagement. And I always try to get, like, ask people, like, what do you see? Like, you know, put it into words, and it's like, and I, you know, it's like, I'm like, so interesting, because it's like, it's a surprise to me. And then I see them having that same experience. And what I kind of long for is, like, to spread further, but for it to still feel like that. So it's, you know, it's kind of, it's like that, you know, somebody's getting it, you know, know, it's not like prepackaged, like, oh yeah, this will sell, this is, you know, that's like, it's so thrown to me, and I do feel like I want to go further, but it's like, I want to keep it, like, I'm actually, like, we're connecting, you know, like, this is a surprise to me, and like, you're part of it.
Mm-hmm. And then you just have to pick the context of which it exists.
Mm-hmm.
You choose where it goes to get that same feeling, don't you think?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for that, though.
Yeah,
thank you. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you,
Freddie,
for having me. Thank you, Oscar, for having me. Thank you so much.